networking, especially when you are in the first years, you don't consider it that important, but as you progress with your career, you realize, you know, how important it is to...
Hello, welcome to episode 54 of the MedTech Podcast. You join me, your host, Karandeep Singh Badwell. And on this episode, we have Yvonne Perez-Chamorro, CEO and co-founder of MedBoard, a regulatory research and intelligence platform covering both MedTech and pharmaceutical industries across 225 countries. Yvonne has a both strong science and business background and holds a BSc and MSc in physics and an MBA. Having worked for nearly 15 years within the industry in leading medical companies and also as a consultant in the areas of regulatory, product and business development, he has broad experience with different types and classes of products, supporting a variety of organizational models and management from startups to large corporations. In this episode, we explore the challenges of staying abreast of constantly evolving regulations and guidance documents on a global scale. He shares invaluable insights on successful networking and imparts valuable advice for aspiring entrepreneurs. Furthermore, we delve into his personal journey in covering how a sports injury compounded shift from physics to medical devices, prompted by a misdiagnosis that persisted for more than 4 years. Welcome to the show, Ivan. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you so much. And thank you as well for having me.
Ivan, we've known each other online for quite a few years right now, and it was only a few weeks ago that we met at a conference. So I suppose, what would you say are your tips for effective networking with this industry?
I think probably there's no only one formula. I think a lot comes from finding the right people, finding the people are interested in the same things, and as well, being proactive. Obviously, you know, when we met, we were proactive before the show. We text each other and say, hey, I know what you're going there. Should we just spend some time together just to know each other more personally? So I think being proactive, it comes, you know, very, very important into this process. The other thing is to find people that are interested in the same things and they want to solve the same problems, for sure.
So in terms of networking, how would you say that it's affected your career in terms of the position that you're in today? And then following on from that, how exactly did you get into the position that you are in today with MedBoard?
Networking, especially when you are in the first years, you don't consider it that important, but as you progress with your career, you realize, you know, how important it is to not only have the networking, but as well to have collaborated or work with a lot of people that can validate, you know, the way you work or the deliverables that you are able to do. I think that in my career, I had very lucky situations and moments. I have especially two good mentors alongside my career. So that obviously affects and also helps in how to network effectively. But what I would say, you know, as a general rule is speak to people, communicate to people, and just, you know, make yourself aware out there so people know what you do, what you're interested in, because that way it would be much easier for other people to identify you as a potential networking as well.
So an interesting word you said there was mentors. How exactly would you recommend that the audience go out and find mentors?
I think it's, in my career, it's been essential. I think without, let's say, that headlight telling you ahead, this is what's going to happen, especially the first year with Neil. He was teaching me everything about medical device industry, about, you know, from not only like regulations, but as well medical, clinical, evolution and so on. So that was very key. And as well, obviously, when I met Baha, he's been very instrumental how, you know, he's been helping me across, you know, or alongside, you know, with the MedBoard journey, telling me how is the entrepreneurship journey, what are the positives, the negatives, and as well, give me that encouragement, as well that advice during the journey. So from my experience, it's been essential, it's been key, and probably I wouldn't be where I am right now without that mentorship.
Some previous conversations, we've talked about mentorships and our experience with mentees being on both ends of the scale. What would you say are the key attributes that mentors need to look for in a mentee in order for to determine whether this is going to be a successful relationship or not?
I think that the first thing is both parties, they respect each other, they value each other, And as well, there are certain liking in terms of personality, in terms of alignment. You know, a lot of people, they either mentees or mentors, they feel reflected on the other role. So they want to help because really have really good intentions in terms of how can I help this person to achieve things because I believe in the potential of this person. So I think it comes down to human nature. It comes down to actually liking the person, having similar interests and believing in the other person as well. A lot of mentors, what they would like is a person that works hard, for sure. Because what they want is they want to invest time on in that person, but they want to see some return that that person has implemented, you know, their advice or just follow the same or a different path, but they have made some progress.
So there's so many changes occurring on a regular basis in the form of garden stocks and regulations, etc. How exactly do you keep up with them all, and how exactly did you come up with the idea of MedBoard, which, from my understanding, is trying to resolve that problem?
In the how to keep up, obviously there could be different ways, right? What we're experiencing right now is not only regulatory, we cover as well, we help people from clinical, from market as well, is there are two problems. One of them is the authorities, key stakeholders and so on, they're asking for more information, they're asking for more reports, they're asking for more actually evidence. And on the other side, we have much more information that is being published by other stakeholders, by authorities themselves, and so on. So one of the calculations we did internally as well is 10 years ago, there was only 60 news that were published from regulatory authorities, right? 10 years after, there are 1,760 they've been published in a year. Obviously, the expansion is quite high. How to keep up? Obviously, people can do it manually, but it's going to take, obviously, all the time. And I think humans, we are not designed to actually just copying and pasting and just being just checking things 24/7, no sleeping, right? So in order to meet or to solve that issue, what we created is a system technology in order to classify all those updates and then allowing people to reviewing the same way as you do a change note, saying if this is relevant, not relevant, this has an impact, these are the action terms. So that's kind of like the approach we are taking on a very high level.
So just like myself, you started your career within quality and regulatory consulting. For those looking to take a similar path, what would you say are the reasons of why they maybe should consider this path or maybe not consider it?
I think sometimes at the very beginning of the career, you don't know what you want to get into. I think the main important thing is to get into action with any role. And I think as you progress your career, you can decide whether you like that part or you don't like that part or you want to move to another role. Regulatory quality and all those different activities, they convey a lot of knowledge from development to obviously regulations, laws, but as well engineering, knowing the device, interpreting as well in terms of a strategy. So, you know, obviously the advice is more related to what that human you know really wants in their life and how they want to approach their career. I think there's one path that we can put one person, you're going to be a regulatory quality. And I think the true value of a professional, especially working in the medical industry, is to change roles from time to time, because then you can see the different approaches or the different perspectives from other colleagues and departments as well.
So another interesting thing is when it comes to consulting, what would you say are the key skills that somebody should have from a non-technical perspective? Like you mentioned communication skills, but do you think that there may be some other skills that people should maybe develop before going onto this path?
Obviously, if you move into, when I used to be a consultant, it's about more delivering, right? So first is following the process. You need to understand very well the needs. You need to understand what actually the customer wants and they need. Just suggest different options so they can choose as well, implement the strategy and implement the actions. So I think most of the times when you are working with and it's the same as now we have a platform, it's about building trust. So they put some, you know, hopes that you're going to deliver, you're going to have some results, and then you return that with trust, actually delivering those results. So I think a lot has to do, obviously, with technical skills, obviously being good, being knowledgeable. I think one of the key things as well, as we mentioned, that this 1,700 news per year, is you need to keep up to date. And as well, you need to keep all that knowledge freshen up all the time. But obviously the soft skills, they make a lot of difference, because at the end of the day, you need to work with people, they need to like you, and you need to like them, and you need to come together with solutions. So at the end, it's about human interaction and how you come together to solve the problems.
So for the listeners today who maybe not heard of you before, what exactly is MedBoard and what is the platform all about?
So MedBoard is a cloud platform. What we do is we integrate all the worldwide information and data related to regulatory, clinical and market. We just put everything in just one big place. So we have more than 1 billion data points. It's huge in that sense. And around this information portal search engine, what we're doing is creating digital solutions that allow professionals to be much more effective. So our vision or why is how we can make the professionals to focus on what truly matters. And what we believe is shouldn't be copy and paste, it shouldn't be checking news or should checking information all over the place. So the digital solutions, we have systematic review processes for literature, but as well for PMS, as well we have for regulatory intelligence, of course. We have some intelligence workspaces as well, pro registration. So we have a different solutions. We are mapping as well the whole industry in terms of all the products are on the market, all the hospitals are in the market, all the manufacturers, authorities. So we are mapping the whole ecosystem and trying to integrate this with data science and AI as well. So that's our main focus. And it's how to make people to access instantly trusted information and up to date. That's our main focus for us. Regardless, it's regulatory, it's clinical information, or it's market information.
So, in terms of MedBoard, are you just covering UK, EU, and US, or is this something that you're covering worldwide or jurisdictions?
We are actually covering the whole world. We are covering more than 225 countries, which initially we started with just a few countries, but as we got more customers and more customers asking to expand, so we decided just to go and cover the whole, all the jurisdictions, right? So we even have the Antarctica, which is quite funny to have included. But we cover all the countries, and our vision is to have a global vision. So especially with the PMS, vigilance, and patient safety, if you can understand that in other regions, that device or that specific requirement has some impact in your context, that's something that obviously that would be a winning for that person or professional.
So in terms of information from other jurisdictions, which countries would you say are the most proactive when it comes to guidance documents and offering help effectively for medical devices, in your opinion?
So there are specific countries that are very active, so then they produce very good documentation. I think one thing that I would like to emphasize is the authorities have become much better in communicating and delivering the information over the years. If you look like 10 years ago, it would be like a short guidance, just a few lines, short notice as well. Now the guidance are very well elaborated. So a lot of information comes directly from the authorities. The authorities that are actually more active are obviously US traditionally, but as well China, Australia, Singapore, and United Kingdom. Obviously European Union, as all the changes that are happening, but those are the ones that are producing more documents, more guidance, and that's what we see in the statistics as well.
So when you was early on in your career, before a platform like MedBoard existed and you created this, how on earth did you keep up with all these changes? Was this a manual process, or did you rely on other people? How did you go about doing this?
So the quick answer is it was not needed. I always tell this story, like 10 years ago when I was working in orthopedics, or it was around 10 years or maybe a bit more, they published the 3D printing guidance, the FDA. and I have time to print it, take it home, highlight it, make annotations by the sides, then creating a summary, creating a presentation and presenting to the team, right? There was no need to keep up to date because that was the only guidance that FDA may be publishing 2 months, right? So when I mentioned before, 10 years ago, there was only 60 news that were published globally from authorities related to MedTech. So if we look at 10 years ago, for example, only one person could keep up to date because there was no much going on. Now, obviously, this has multiplied like 25 times in terms of information, and it's not only about the guidance, it's always the impact assessments and the requirements that emanate from all those communications, guidance and regulations. That is, if we look at 25x, you just multiply a bit more x for the actions that are required to in order to make sure those requirements are met. So the short answer, it was not needed. It's something that is increasing, and obviously we need to find solutions.
So as somebody who studied physics, how exactly did you get involved with the medical devices from the get-go? Is it something that you fell into, or is it something that you always wanted to do?
I think, obviously, there is a story about this. I think I never shared this in any podcast or communications. So the story how I transitioned from physics to medical devices, medical and so on, comes back to my time when I was playing basketball, when I was 17 years old, and then I got injured. So I got an injury in my two Achilles tendons. I used to play basketball, but obviously I had an injury in my Achilles tendons. I couldn't do more, a lot of pain and so on. So I was misdiagnosed for 4 years, right? So during 4 years, I was visiting doctors. They were telling they were too weak. And then I was actually doing the opposite I should be doing, right? So what happened is after I finished physics, I finished the Masters of Physics, is when you come to these questions, what do I do with my life? And then I realized I had spent, since I was 16 in years old, in rehabilitation, just trying to fix, myself in terms with, with a thing that, I love sports, and obviously I cannot do sports because that injury is chronic right now, right? So what happened is after I finished physics, I looked for medical, and then I was looking in terms of like any role. And then luckily I had this opportunity for working in a consulting company in Cambridge. And then I started helping that. And Neil was very kind. And after 1 year and a half, he told me, hey, you should join a company that really meets as well, your vision and your passion. So I actually ended in Kairos. That is a company that fixes people like me. So they do artificial ligaments. And that's something that really fulfilled me. Obviously, Baha is one of my mentors. And that changed my life in terms of like how I closed the circle. And then I was involved into, artificial ligaments and so on, which, it made me very happy to help, to be helping people to that they had the same injury. So the journey is because I spent so much time trying to fix myself with the problem I had in my chronic tendons that I still have the problem, that I ended in the medical industry. And then eventually, MedBoard, I always say, can we create this big platform where you can get information very quickly, trusted? Because I always say that if my doctor, when I was 16 years old, had a platform like MedBoard or a similar platform, then I would have been misdiagnosed for 4 or 5 years. So, that's the key thing, because I spent 4 or 5 years until a doctor came across with me and said to me, how can you live like this? So that was like a pinnacle of, how to change things. And I started to think, obviously, how to use the negative or the bad things for actually a good purpose. And this is where we are right now.
That's a very interesting point that you put up, turning a negative into a positive. What were your tips in that situation? So obviously you came up with this negative situation where, you really enjoyed playing sports and you had this injury. And of course it would have been a period of time where you were upset, but then you managed to turn it around and build a business around it that sort of helps people. What does that process look like? How do you identify what you can do in terms of turning a negative into a positive?
I think it's a process that takes time. Obviously, when I was young, 16, 17, even 21, 22, I was always trying to come back. I always didn't succeed. It's a process to realize where are your cards in life, just assuming reality. And then I think starting to see or be grateful for the things that you have, right? So I think the process for me took a bit of time. You know, it was a complicated, or it's still a complicated injury. But I think you learn over time just to understand what are the opportunities in this situation. I always say that if I didn't have this injury, probably I wouldn't be doing MedBoard, or I wouldn't have helped all the people I help, you know, in my career. So I think one of the key things for turning that negative into positive is learning more about myself, learning about my reality, and as well understand what I can do to others to help. You know, that sense of gratitude, I think that's what changed you in many ways.
So on the topic of MedBoard, what are your future plans for this? Are you looking at expanding the platform, maybe looking into going to other directions? What's your future for it looking like?
I think the future for us, we are very excited about what we're building. What we have done is we have bootstrapped the company first, just to make sure we have a good product. That's the main thing for us. And then obviously growing organically, so we can make sure that our customers, they are with us, they suggest more information or more features to us, and so on. So the journey for us is just to create a platform where anybody can find information instantly related to regulatory, market, and clinical. And obviously the vision is very big. If we look into other search engines, into other information portals that are out there, so we know the vision. We always say that we have enough work for the next 20 years. And I love that, because that means that our mission and our vision is big enough, yeah, to keep going. And as well, we can have more impact to people. So obviously there are different features that we are creating. We follow a lot the suggestions and as well the inputs from our customers. So what people would expect is having a place where they can find all the products, they can find all the manufacturers. We are building as well a key opinion leaders database, conditions, and as well all the regulatory requirements breakdown by every country and so on. So this granulated information, but as well from this huge search engine to find relevant information. Obviously, we are working a lot with AI, but what we want to do is to develop or deploy things when they are 100% trusted. So we are against, we always say that we deliver trust as a service. So we don't want to deliver anything that can hallucinate, as these days we have with ChatGPT and so on. So we are very excited, because as we have a lot of data organized, we can actually deliver a lot of insights and information that otherwise it would take a lot of time for people to get.
So as we've both known as entrepreneurs, there's been points in our careers where we thought about giving up. You know, we've come across failures, etc. How exactly did you deal with those failures before you got to the position that you're in today? Because I'm guessing there were some times where you thought, you know what, I'm going to go back to what I was doing before.
Oh, yes. I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty certain that every entrepreneur will have those moments where you think, you know, you're going to give up. I think that the thing that kept me obviously going in that sense is first passion. I think if you don't have passion for what you do, you have 1,000 reasons just to give up, or to say, I'm going to go to the barbecue this weekend, or I'm going to just give up. I'm just going to do that job and not worry about anything. So that passion, or for example, in this, you know, I shared before about this intrinsic situation I had in my life. This is what I want to do. I want to make this information accessible. I want that the next Ivan that maybe they get diagnosed or so on, it gets as well getting the right information. So obviously we are not there right now, but I would like that if there is a future Ivan, it doesn't get misdiagnosed for 4 years or 3 years and so on. The other thing is having a really good network. And you know, that's I'm talking about my family. So they always like super supportive, even in the bad times, you know, like, you're always going to have up and downs and bad days, but my family has been supportive, and the mentors. You know, I always remember some weeks, I was like, okay, this is maybe not going the direction I wanted. You know, what I'm doing here, that is not working correctly, and so on. And then just spending one day with, you know, Baha, you know, with a mentor, just talking, give me that comfort, asking me to be patient, to focus on the specific things and so on. And as well, listening to a person that already has gone through that journey and understanding that this is no, I'm special because I'm feeling this up and downs, that this is normal. This is normal for any entrepreneur. And if you want to be an entrepreneur and make a change, obviously you need to experience this moment. So by having that passion and a really good network, that they can tell you the good things and the bad things. So, you know, I always said, you know, you're my mother, they always like, oh yeah, this or this. But I like people that tell me things as they are, right? You know, as well, you know, my father has been super supportive. So in that sense, you know, emotionally, and this is the most important thing, that if you feel that comfort or that support, you know, is super important, you know. I think that, you know, that one of the key moments in my life as well with my mentor Baha, met my parents. So, you know, I could see all the people really supporting me with heart. They were all together in a room and we were having dinner. So, you know, I think that having a passion and having a good supporting network is essential for an entrepreneur.
Another thing with entrepreneurs is people often think that you are completely crazy. And then when you try to speak to some of your friends and you explain your ideas, they think that you are losing your mind. So how do you deal with that situation? Is it you just ignore them and you move on, or you try to explain to them how your mindset works?
I think you need to learn to read the signals and to read from where those signals are coming from. I think, you know, maybe a friend that doesn't understand your journey but is your best friend, it will push you to more relax, which is good in that sense. Others, maybe they are very into the industry and entrepreneurs alike, you know, as you, they will give you different tips, you know, to correct or to improve in productivity. So it's, I think it's up to the person to actually understand the network, as well get rid of the negative people as well. They will be around negative people and so on. So I think just building that, again, that network that you know you can rely on in the good times and the bad times, and you know, that is very important. But you know, I really enjoy, I don't know about you, but I really enjoy very much about coming back to, you know, my hometown and hanging out with my friends from my life. And we don't even talk about entrepreneurship. We just talk about normal things. And I love those moments as well. And I don't even talk about, you know, MedBoard or any entrepreneurship situation. So you just find that balance. Obviously, you have people around you that support, obviously they will find, you know, very interesting to learn more about what you do. The other thing I it's been super helpful is to learn from other entrepreneurs. Even if it's not even related to your industry, like learning about what they fail with. And, you know, even like I read books, I watch as well videos, and as well I speak to other people. And we had a small conversation on how to scale, how difficult it is to scale. So I always like trying to learn from others, especially about how they solve the problems, especially the difficulties. And if they failed, why they failed, and is this something that we need to consider as well? So having that, you know, as well, like network of other entrepreneurs is super helpful. At least for me, it's just to know whether what we're doing is correct, not correct, and understand as well the possible solutions out there.
So you mentioned your hometown, being that you're currently based in Leeds. Where is home for you, and how did you end up in Leeds?
So my hometown is Salamanca, Spain. Someone may claim that it's the most beautiful city in the world. It's kind of it's the second oldest university in the world as well. So I spent a lot of time there as well. I studied physics. So I ended in Leeds for this journey, following actually the path about my injury. So after living in Salamanca, I also live in Italy, I also live in Ireland, different countries as well. And then I moved to Cambridge following my passion for medical, fixing patients and medical medical industry, and then I ended in Leeds because Kairos, you know, this company for orthopedics that they do implants for tendons, is based here. So actually, I didn't choose Leeds. What happened is the company actually was fixing people like me. It was based here, and then I became obviously very good friends with Baha. And then I stayed around in this area, and I love this area as well because it's full of you know, parks. I love nature, so I cannot do sports, but I tend to do a bit of hiking as well, or the exercise I can as well. So that's the small kind of like story about the journey, how I ended up in Leeds as well.
Ivan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. What one piece of advice would you leave the listeners with today?
Advice? Just follow your passion and never give up. I think that's for anything you do in life, I think that's the most important thing, you know, I learned, you know, from my journey as well.
Thank you very much for your time, Ivan, and I'm pretty sure we'll probably bump into each other again in a few months' time.
I'm sure of that, and it will be a pleasure as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to episode 54 of the MedTech Podcast. If you have not already done so, please subscribe. If you wish to learn more about Ivan, you can connect with him online or visit his company website, the links of which are provided in the description. If there are any particular topics or guests you'd like for me to have on the show in future, then feel free to reach out.